Bridget and Scott, the Bruins are off to a 3-2-1 start. Their most recent loss came in Utah against the Utah Hockey Club. They fell in overtime 2-1. Right now, the Bruins sit in Nashville. They're trying to get their practice time in before they take on a desperate Predators team.
Before they go down Broadway. And I'm pretty sure they're probably not going to have the happiest Nashville trip. If they had won in Utah, maybe, but
I was just going to say
it's one of those, let's go out on the town until 3 a.m. Nashville trips.
Well, if anything, their night to do that was Sunday, because they actually do have Monday off. So if they were going to get that in, they already did. And now starting up,
now they're all hungover right now.
Better be back to business.
As we record at 10 a.m. on Monday, they're rolling out of bed right now.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I don't think there was a happy coaching staff. So even if they had that Sunday buffer to have a good time, it's one of those things where like they did just to kind of drink away some issues on the ice. But yeah, it hasn't been pretty, guys. So we can hop right into the opening shifts. Despite their record being decent, you know, it hasn't been pretty on the ice.
Yeah, and by the way, they were actually originally not going to practice Sunday either, and they added in a practice in Utah before they left, which I know will tie more into Bridget's opening shift. But mine is about the offense, because we continue to see them get next to nothing from their second and third lines. Even the top line has now gone quiet for a few games. Zacha, Lindholm, and Pastrnak. And we'll get into all of that. I want to bring in some numbers here on just kind of how dire this has been at 5-on-5, because I think if you pull up NHL.com and you go to stats and you look at goals per game, Bruins are 10th, 3.5 goals per game. And you think, hey, that's not bad. Yeah, actually, that's pretty good, right? But I think if you watch them, like, we know they're having their bacon saved by the fourth line night after night, and the rest of it has not looked good. And if you look at 5-on-5 stats, it's pretty bad. Like, that they are actually spending some time in the offensive zone. They are above average in offensive zone time, but they're doing nothing in there. So I will remind you that there are 32 teams in the NHL. 5-on-5 shot attempts per 60 minutes. Bruins rank 31st. Shots on goal per 60 minutes. Bruins ranked 32nd, dead last. And so maybe you're thinking, well, Scott, Jim Montgomery has told us many times that they are a quality, not quantity team. Okay, so let's look at quality. Scoring chances at 5-on-5. Bruins rank 30th. High danger chances. Bruins rank 30th. So they are right now, like, what's really saving them is they are 5th in shooting percentage. So unless you think that they are just a team full of snipers that's going to keep burying shots from, you know, the dots or further away, like Cole Koepke beating a goalie 5-hole from, you know, a little outside the right dot, this is actually, like, even worse than I think that it looks on the surface, because they're not getting quantity or quality right now at 5-on-5. And that desperately needs to change. And, you know, to me, Brian, you brought this up in the last podcast, but like, I think ramp up the quantity and the quality will follow. Like, again, as I said, they actually have had some offensive zone time. They're just not doing anything with it. And I think they have to get into a mindset of just throw more pucks on net and see what starts to happen. Like, worry about working for better quality later.
And I'll go next. So my opening shift is, Scott kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, is that after that Saturday breakdown, giving up a lead and end up getting 1 point instead of two against Utah, the Bruins end up having a practice on Sunday. And some of the reporters that were there were asking, you know, did they get what they wanted out of the practice? And coach said it was a very vocal practice on Sunday. And what they were working on the most was puck pressure. And the fact, and one of the things Montgomery said he didn't like besides that was just the speed of the team from the beginning to now. Like, so far through six games, he doesn't like the speed of the team compared to his first two seasons, where he thought that they got off to strong starts. I mean, record-wise, obviously they did both of the years that he's been here. But they also just looked faster by this point in the year, the last two seasons. And that's why you can see him getting frustrated in that game against Utah and having to try to push different buttons this year than maybe he did in the past. And I know that leads right into yours, Brian.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's a stark difference between Monty's first year as Bruins head coach and what is the beginning of his third year as Bruins head coach, which happens to be the final year of his contract currently, where he's not under, there's no contract extension in place at this moment here on October 21st. And his first year, he comes into a team that, even though there were doubters in the beginning of the season about the Bruins not even making the playoffs that year, that all got silenced quickly. But you look at that roster, you had David Krejci, Patrice Bergeron, Nick Foligno, Brad Marchand. Right there, you have four player coaches that if things go awry, don't worry, coach, we got it. We'll talk to them, okay? Those buffers are no longer there besides Brad Marchand. And ironically enough, it was Marchand who got the blunt of Montgomery's frustration in the Utah game that Bridget just alluded to. And so I want to bring up the dynamic between Jim Montgomery right now in more of a bad cop role and his players who, for just to stick with the analogy, seem to be resisting arrest a little bit with what his message is. And, you know, against Utah, Brad Marchand up a goal, third period, he tries to go through two, three, four Utah players at the attacking blue line. No help behind him. He gets stripped. They go down. They score. Goal is called back for offsides. Monty lets him have it. Obviously, Brad Marchand knows a thing or two about how to play hockey. He's a Stanley Cup champion. He's a captain in the NHL. He's had success at the international level, and he's a future Hockey Hall of Famer, potentially. He knows better than to turn a puck over in that situation. You get that puck back down low, and you avoid a turnover at all costs. So when Montgomery flips out a Marchand there, it's kind of clearly a culmination of feelings and emotions that Montgomery has been feeling, probably dating back to points at last season through training camp and the start of this year, where there's definitely some sort of gap between what Monty is trying to have them play and what's happening during games. And I'm wondering if Montgomery is feeling the pressure of coaching in his final year of his contract, actively without an extension in place. And somebody mentioned to me online that regardless of coaching style, you do have to probably yell at one point or another to get your message through. And I agree. I loved seeing Monty lean into Marchand there. I guess the question I have is, what happens if that message doesn't get through, right? And where do things go if they continue to struggle? So it's something to keep an eye on. Again, they're 3-2-1. It's early in the season. But it's just something to keep an eye on if struggles continue.
It was certainly rare, right? Like, that's not a scene on the bench that we've seen in the past two seasons all that much, especially not the first year. I feel like the first year, I don't know if he even had to do that once or even attempted to do that once, because he had Bergeron just talk to the guys on the bench and kind of was more hands off with it. But that was definitely when I watched it, you know, when you watch the replay of it, he goes right at Marchand and like pushes him on the shoulder, and I couldn't read his lips. I tried. I don't know if any of you have any idea what he said, but yeah, he straight up like went right at him, screamed at him. Marchand kind of looking away opposite direction, but I mean, obviously Marchand knows he messed up and got lucky that it got called back. But the Bruins, you know, managed to blow the lead again later in the third. So.
Yeah. I think Montgomery saw an opening there where you can do that to Marchand and you know he's going to handle it and respond the right way. And you can kind of use your captain as an example to the rest of the team. Like, this is it's kind of the classic, you know, we heard for years, like Belichick would walk into a Monday morning meeting and pull up a mistake Tom Brady made and rip Tom Brady. And like, that would just set the tone for the rest of the team. Cause it's like, well, yeah, you're not going to pick on the backup linebacker, or in this case, you know, third liner or third pairing defenseman. Like, when your captain makes that mistake, you lay into him A, because you expect better from your captain, but B, because he can handle it. And he's going to be, I think, if I know Brad Marchand, he's going to be okay with being made an example of. And because Jim Montgomery is not really just sending a message to Marchand. Like, it's directed at him, but that's a message to the whole team of, like, wake the F up, guys. So when you go at the captain, like, that gets everyone's attention. I think it was a good move by Montgomery. Brian, I do think it's fair to wonder, like, is he, you know, feeling more pressure? Like, does that happen if he has an extension already? Or, you know, it probably doesn't happen if the team's playing a little better and this is just a one-off. But we've seen too many plays like that this season, you know, not necessarily just from Marchand, but from the whole team of guys not protecting the puck and just not being smart with it. And, you know, I think that's a big point of frustration is, like, just, like, guys need to make the right play and need to know how to manage games. And they've not been doing that. And that was a very prominent example of it that almost they ended up blowing the lead anyways, but in that case, almost directly cost them the lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's absolutely what you said, Scott. It wasn't because of the one play in particular. It was a lot of circumstances coming to a boiling point. It's a coach who he's saying the right things before and after games to the media. Okay, the way he wants his team to play, we hear what he says to us and to fans, but you don't see it on the ice. Again, I know it's early in the season and teams get off to slow starts and like we've said all along, like I would rather the team struggle in October with their team game and get it to where it wants to be than opposed to getting off to a strong start when everybody's trying to figure their shit out and then playoffs come around and the Bruins are kind of plateaued. So this is not an uncommon occurrence for even teams that end up winning a Stanley Cup or going far. Now, there might be a lot of people out there who say, okay, Brian, that's great, but I don't like their personnel right now, and I don't think their personnel is good enough. And that remains to be seen. I think you're looking at a roster that is – it's no worse than last year. And so, I mean, you could say that they lost to Brusk, but they also got Lindholm. Like, the personnel is no lesser than it was last year. If anything, it's greater. So, but to keep it to the Montgomery thing, yeah, he sees Marchand make that play. And my question is, Scott, you mentioned how Marchand is the guy to do it to. And I absolutely agree with you. But what if Marchand's reaction is, buddy, get the fuck out of my face. Like, don't embarrass me in front of my teammates. I've won a Stanley Cup in this league. I'm a proven veteran. Like, talk to me after the game. I know what I did wrong there. And the reason I say that is because it wasn't just Monty, like, with his arms crossed being like, Marsh, you wake up. It was, he's cussing at him. He goes over, he even gives him a little nudge. Now, I want to say this for the record. I'm glad he did it. Marchand deserved that. I'll be honest with you. But I'm curious if Marchand didn't take a liking to it because we don't know for sure. I think his character would say he's okay with it. But what if he wasn't? And what if Monty's just looking around at his team and practice after practice, video session after video session, he's telling them what he wants and he's just not seeing it. And he's like, what the hell is going on here? And insert, I'm in the last year of my contract.
Then I think that'd be a much bigger issue. Like if Marchand isn't taking well to it or there's a disconnect there between head coach and captain, then you are talking about a much bigger problem. And then you are, I think, starting to go down the road of, you know, like if a coach's message isn't getting through and it's not even getting through to the captain and through the captain, then you need to like seriously assess the coaching situation and whether Montgomery is still the right guy. Now, I don't think that's what has happened here. I think the fact that they, you know, again, based on what the reporters who were at Sunday's practice said and what Montgomery said after, I say the fact that the captains, including Marchand, were vocal and were kind of bringing it to the team on Sunday tells me the message did get through and that, you know, they're still on the same page. But it's definitely, it's something to monitor. And again, this is the situation that I would say the Bruins front office has put them in by not making a decision on Montgomery before the season and allowing this to kind of go into the regular season. And who knows how long this continues where he doesn't have a contract. And again, Montgomery can say all the right things. He said, you know, he's a day-to-day guy and he's not thinking about his own future and all that, but like, you're human. Like, if you don't have job security, of course you're thinking about it. That's anyone in any profession.
And Bridget, who did the Bruins hire in the offseason as their assistant coach?
Leach.
Right. So it's almost like kind of what people have mentioned that online as well, where they say, well, Bruins ownership and management kind of put a team in place that is not too dissimilar to Bruce Cassidy being around when Claude Julien was still around. Like, you put your head coach around assistant coaches who have head coach experience in the National Hockey League. It's just like a don't get too comfortable move that the Bruins already made. Now, obviously, Jay Leach brings a professionalism and an expertise that they clearly value, but I'm just saying, I don't think that wasn't part of their reasoning as well.
Well, yeah, not only brought Jay Leach back, but also elevated Joe Sacco to associate head coach. And Sacco and Leach were both, they both interviewed when Cassidy got fired. And I think at least Sacco was one of the finalists. And I think Leach was among the last three or four candidates as well. Like, I don't know if he made it to the very end, but yeah, it's like, you know, those are two guys that the front office has looked at before as potential head coaches. So absolutely. There's that pressure too.